Well, it's June, and that means it's Pride Month. So today we're going to talk about the Pride movement. We're going to talk about rainbows, hashtag Pride, hashtag love wins. And in order to do that, I, as promised in the last show, wore my Mexican wedding shirt that Joy got me to celebrate weddings, traditional Catholic weddings. How are you, Tim? You're in a different locale.
I'm well. Welcome to beautiful Solvang, California. It's actually, I was going to make a joke, but it's one of, it's right near the Santa Ynez, California mission. It's a beautiful area. It's kind of a, it's not an unknown tourist gem, but it's known to only some tourists. It's about 30 miles from Santa Barbara, and it's really cool. It's considered the Danish capital of North America. And that you literally can get like a Danish or a pastry at every stop. It's if you like Danishes and or pastries, it's
good. Were there many Danish immigrant there? Why is that?
Yeah, there are. I mean, all the architecture is Danish. Here, I'll flip you around here. Mm-hmm. Can you see that clock up there?
You're kidding me. It looks like you're in Denmark right now. I think you're tricking us.
No, I'm serious. Like it's legit.
Yeah. There's something sweet broadcast in the state of Denmark right now. You should be chomping on a Danish right now. You usually have your bagel, but you got that going. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that looks cool. Right. I thought you just kind of fell down these stairs right here behind you.
Kind of. Yeah. I could have for all the viewing audience knows. But no, this is how my family, we celebrate Gay Pride Month, June, privately. Mm-hmm. And we do so by going to a new foreign location in America. How do you celebrate?
I celebrate it with a Mexican wedding shirt.
Yeah.
And I drink coffee and I kiss my wife a ton.
Yeah. It's not very gay.
Do your kids like it when you and Steph kiss in front of them?
I don't know. I've never really asked them, but I'd imagine that they're getting to the age where they're mildly weirded out by it. But
yeah, my older ones are like, oh man, but my younger ones love it.
Yeah.
Speaking of younger ones.
How do you know they love it? Do they report back?
They're like,
back,
mommy like, and daddy are merry kissing. Hey, what's up?
Yeah, they'll do that. I guess they'll do that.
Margaret, we're not super. She pulled a Barbie car at me.
Oh, she threw a Barbie car at you?
She almost threw it at my head.
And Daddy.
It's dangerous.
And Daddy. And she was starting to pinch me. She was starting to pinch me. And she was starting to dig the baby doll.
Okay. So you threw the Barbie car and you tried to pinch her.
She almost wanted to let me get home.
Sounds like a country song.
Well, let's just wave to America and say, happy day. All right, I'm back. I had to distribute some justice within our land.
Speaking commutative of justice. You had to do commutative justice because you want arithmetic proportion and commutative justice. That's like legal justice. You don't want distributive justice there.
No. Well, I don't know what they wanted. They just wanted someone to be in trouble. Anyway, speaking of fun things in the Pride Month, there's these guys, before we get into the rainbows and Pride Month and hashtag love and all that, there's these really funny guys in Boston. Tell us about us, Tim. Tell us about them, Tim.
Yeah, they're called Super Happy Fun America.
I love it.
It's three young gentlemen. I think these guys sound like they have the hearts of champions. I would love to hang out with these guys. They claim to advocate on behalf of the straight community in order to foster respect and awareness with people from all walks of life. They're planning the event to celebrate straight pride. The parade appeared to be a reaction to the city's rejection of the group's application to raise its straight pride flag at Boston City Hall earlier this spring. Here's the statement they released. We're disappointed that the Walsh administration has chosen hate and discrimination. Therefore, we have decided to launch a campaign to educate the public, politicians, and civil servants about the straight community and the unique problems we face. We have determined that a parade would be the best way to promote our community and its diverse history, culture, and identity. We anticipate that the city will eventually choose to embrace tolerance and inclusivity. We invite Mayor Martin J. Walsh to participate and express the city's support for the straight community, reads the events page. The hilarious thing is this guy, they say Antifa, short for anti-fun, is not welcome because they oppose happiness and fun. So, I mean, these guys are clearly legit.
I love these guys.
The organization is led by three men and helmed by President John Hugo. Hugo ran for U.S. Congress in 2018 as a Republican, but was defeated by Democrat incumbent Catherine Clark. I mean, this is.
We need to get on Twitter and blow these guys up.
Yeah,
what are they called again? Super Happy Fun America.
Yeah,
which is where I want to live. I want to live in Super Happy Fun America.
Yeah,
I don't want to live in sad, bummed out America.
Antifa America, no. Yeah. So anyway, they just sound like good dudes. It looks like the straight pride parade will happen. Vice President Mark Sahady, sorry if I got that wrong, said that the tentative date is August 31st. So anybody on, you know, in the area,
Should definitely
Boston area, hit it.
Show the support. Yeah.
Assuming you celebrate straight pride. I mean, we need to celebrate straight pride, right?
I do.
I'm serious.
I do daily.
I do too. I do
for
something
me. It's not just
straight.
August.
No. It's straight pride month. It's straight pride year all year long.
Yeah. Well, that's what they would say. Household. They would be like, you guys get all year. We just get June.
Yeah, maybe so. But June's part of our year.
That's true.
So I. If
it's
that's
because
case,
you know what? We conceive and have babies every month of the year.
Right. I mean, If it were biologically possible, I would advocate that. Just 12 babies a year. One woman.
Only if they were born like, only if they were born at like developmentally somehow they were like 17 and it was just 1 year and then they went off into the world like a deer. Or a horse.
Like a pig or a cattle.
Yeah, it's just they're born, and then the next thing you know, they're out on their own. We humans got a long, long tail on that, don't we? 18 years of developmental work.
I'd be down with babies being born at like 3. I mean, kids get really, really damn cute at 2.5, 3.
Yeah, so my favorite is 3. I've had 8 kids. I'm on my 8th one right now. She's 3. You just saw how cute she was, kind of.
Even when they're fighting.
Yeah, it's just everything they're saying. And that, you know, at 2, they kind of have terrible 2s. They don't speak that well. At 3, they speak really well, but they don't understand the world fully. So their questions and their comments are just
pure gold.
Hilarious. Yeah, just pure gold all the time, every day.
Yeah, the syntax is good enough.
Yeah.
Like the grammar is still cute and like sloppy and whatever. Sometimes idiotic, but the syntax is good, and they're just saying hilarious things all the time. Yeah, we were in the pool yesterday, right over there. I could show it to you. And out loud, Pippin asked me, "There's an elderly woman floating," and she said, "Is that a man or a woman?" Really loud.
Well, it is June. It's June.
It's June. It's Gay Pride Month, Pippin.
You don't know.
The joke is on you.
Yeah. So yeah, we salute the Super Happy Fun America. I think I might. Can we join that? Do they have satellite cells across America?
Are these guys TNT fans? If so, who's to say? We don't have the technology to know. But if so, yeah, we should get patched in and give them a 3-gun salute or however that goes.
Yeah, we should. Maybe everyone should Google Super Happy Fun America and then see. We need to find out if they're on Twitter and
I think they are.
Yeah. It's funny.
Yeah, we should. So August 31st.
If you're in Boston area, be there.
Do it. Don't miss it.
How much do you bet milkshakes will be thrown at them?
It's without a doubt. But
without a
doubt. This is why you need. We were joking about the difference in titular fun between Super Happy Fun America and Proud Boys. This is why you need a confluence of forces. Need the Proud Boys to go represent and.
Well, they're so funny because Proud Boys, you know, like that sounds like you got something going on, you know. But Super Happy Fun America, who can say no to those guys? Like, I would like to officially go on camera and say, I am opposed to Super Happy Fun America. Who's going to do that?
Yeah, no, I think that.
It's awesome.
Clearly the genius. Happy Fun America is evil.
Yeah, like, someone's going to put them on the, like, hate list. Like, yes. Reading down the hate list, and it's, you know, all these groups, you know, David Duke fanboys and all, and it says Super Happy Fun America.
Genius.
I also want to see what their flag looks like.
Yeah, I'll bet it's good.
I bet it's good. Yeah, I bet it's funny. So, all right. Well, this whole thing is ridiculous. And you had a good tweet the other day, Tim, about we got to take back the rainbow. The Seriously? Rainbow is our, well, it's not ours. It's God's. It's the covenant of Noah, the Noahic covenant. And some people don't know this because in the English translations, it says rainbow. God gave Noah a rainbow. And he said, this shows that I will never again flood the earth to kill mankind. Right. But in the Hebrew, it's actually the word for a warrior's bow. I think it's keshet. It's a warrior's bow. So it's supposed, you know, like this. Bing. Legolas style. So it's that. It's going like this. In which way is it pointing? Up to God.
Right. Right.
So it's in these, you go through the seven covenants. The covenant of Noah is one of the covenants. But in all the covenants, there is usually like a outcome that's negative for the party that fails. In the new covenant, it's hell. All right. So, but in the Noahic covenant, it's unilateral. It's not bilateral. And God's basically saying, I'm never going to harm you again with water like this. He places the bow and it's pointing towards him. Like in modern day, it'd be like a giant AR-15 pointed at sky, pointed at God. Right. It's a sign. It's a warrior's bow pointed to heaven. And ultimately, that means who is going to die for the sins of mankind? God, right? So it's kind of like a prophecy about the incarnation and the death of Jesus, that God, for sinful mankind, he's going to provide a sacrament of baptism to wash us, right, which is like the flood. And then B, if we mess up again, he's going to take the arrow. He's going to take the death, the hit. So when you think of all of the theology of it, now you're like, whoa, when the homosexual propaganda movement takes the rainbow, they're basically just flaunting and blaspheming this covenantal symbol of God's dying for mankind's sin. You know,
right.
That's bogus.
Not to mention, just at a more basic level, that's the abstruse theology of it, which is very useful. Only some of which I knew, but I mean, it's a rainbow. Like I was talking to, again, same daughter, Pippin, by the pool, same location. It's the other story. And she's bringing up how rainbow is her favorite color. And I'm like, yeah, it's sweet. Like
it is awesome.
Like, I'm a grown straight man. And the rainbow is so bad. It's so neat. It's so good.
Awesome.
That, like, how do we lose that?
You ever get that moment, Tim, where you're in the backyard, you got your spray nozzle and you're spraying plants, and then it hits the sun and there's a rainbow, and you just sort of like pause for a moment. You're like, whoa, that's amazing. Yeah, it's super cool. Just the way the light goes through all that water and makes that beautiful rainbow.
Who doesn't like that? And exactly.
I like it. I mean, it's super happy fun.
Super happy fun, America. You've got red, a couple blues. You don't have a white in there, but it's the vast array of white light. So it, in my view, in my estimation, that is red, white, and blue. I mean, I'm being dead serious though. Just a rainbow's super bad, and I don't want to give that up. It's too cool. It's one of my daughter's favorite colors.
There's a song. I'm trying to remember who sings it. Rainbow in the Dark. What song is that? Who sings that? Like a rainbow in the dark. No, it's super cheesy.
I'm checking it for you.
This was before rainbow was taken over by, you know who. Are you looking it up? Rainbow in the Dark.
Yeah.
Is it like Dio or it's not Black Sabbath?
Sounds like a
Black Sabbath song, but Rainbow in the Dark. people in the comments are going to be lighting it up. Oh, it's Dio.
Yeah, it's Dio. It is Dio.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, rainbow in the tiring.
Look at this guy. I mean, look at the Dio guy just pointing at us menacingly in this
thing.
Yeah,
dude.
Can you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Look at that, dude.
I might have to put
some...
You think
that guy's afraid of a rainbow in the dark? Forget about it. You want to take a roundhouse kick to the face while I'm wearing these bad boys?
Forget about it. So speaking of... While we're wearing these bad boys, what should we do? Should we all start wearing rainbow clothing and just being like with like a giant crucifix? Because when I did my Revelation commentary, which y'all can all watch on YouTube, I really talk about the importance of God's throne in heaven is surrounded by a rainbow. It's in the book of Revelation. It's in the Apocalypse. And you see a lot of apocalyptic art and you see the rainbow around God. Hmm. Right? Because it's so beautiful. It's like, what's your favorite color? A rainbow. Like your
rainbow,
daughter.
Baby.
Who said that? Pippin. Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah. Smart choice. It's a smart choice. Woman. She's prudent.
Yeah, it's like, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream? All of them.
All?
Yeah.
Not even just Neapolitan, but all?
Yeah, all. Rainbow sherbet.
Rainbow sherbet. Ordered two of those for the daughters the other night. We went out for ice cream. So that's what I mean. Rainbow is everywhere. It's coming up on this trip a lot. And and now it's, put a cross with a rainbow. And I mean, it's just not like a tie-dyed way. That looks more gay. But I mean, rainbow's super bad, eh? And I think if we just start literally saying, like, this doesn't mean what you say it means. I'm going to wear rainbow clothing while kissing my wife and
maybe we should all wear rainbow clothing and go to the Super Happy Fun America parade and wear rainbow. And they would be super confused. Like, I thought this was straight pride parade. Like it is. Why are y'all wearing solid rainbow clothing? Like, cause rainbow is BA. We like rainbow.
Right.
Like, I thought you were straight. Like we are straight and we like rainbow.
I'm wearing rainbow because of straight, not because of gay.
I wear rainbow in the dark.
Yeah.
Like the song, you know? Like it's rainbow.
Yeah. With that Dio guy pointing at me like, hey, remember.
Yeah.
Remember who you are. Now, I mean, my favorite part of that statement by Super Happy Fun America is celebrating the diverse history and the vast array of diversity under heterosexuality than homosexuality.
Yeah.
It's all the same, right? We have more diversity. We have all the colors of the racial rainbow. I mean, I guess so today,
linguistic.
But we have greater numbers, linguistic rainbow. It's just, come on, get.
It's super
take pride.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Oh, we have
sorry
someone.
About that.
Hello. Welcome to TNT.
Yeah. Just doing a little, show here. Good morning.
Awesome. Getting a Danish.
Yeah. Oh, that they serve, you know, the continental breakfast here is kind of like the usual cheap deals.
Right.
Except the Danishes they have. They know you can't be in Solvang, California and give like crappy Svenhards Danishes. They're all quite fresh, freshly grown from the earth.
Yeah.
Wherever Danishes come from.
In Texas, we have, you ever been to West Texas? Not the town, capital WEST. You ever heard of it? It's actually in central Texas. It's not in the West. I don't know what happened there, but it's a Czech town, a Catholic Czech town. And that's whenever you drive through there, you stop and it's just tons of Danishes from Czechoslovakian migrants. Yeah. Yeah.
Czechoslovakian Danishes. That's interesting.
Czech. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we always say you better check yourself before you wreck yourself when you drive through there because you got to pull over. There's several like... Everyone debates on which has the best Danish. I guess they're not Danishes. They're Czechlicious. But it's really good. And so every time we go through West, we used to have a hunting lease that was near there. So we always would stop in and get the Danishes.
Wow.
Yeah. They even have like monster big ones and dainty ones. And
Central Texas. Nothing's really in central. You got the
well, it's north of Waco. It's north of Waco.
Right.
So you got Austin, no, and then you have Waco, and then you have West with your Czech. What do you call them?
Pastries.
Yeah, Czechlicious. And then you got Dallas Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Just right up the bit there. So
yeah. I look like I've had like 10 Checklicious's this morning. I look like I'm on fire. I got a little tan, but I look like an albino.
Okay, so we got to reclaim the rainbow, folks. And I'm going to challenge everybody out there to start wearing some rainbow gear. And maybe we should do like a Love Wins shirt that has a rainbow on it. And it says like, take back the rainbow. Take back Noah's rainbow for Jesus or something.
Like, yeah, that'd be cool.
Otherwise, I mean, are you worried that you're going to, you know, I wear my rainbow hammer pants and people are like, that guy is an awesome LGBT advocate. Thank you, sir. I bet if I did that, I would get, and if I went to Starbucks, I don't go to Starbucks, I'd get a free coffee. If I had like rainbow hammer pants on.
Dude, I don't know if gay men wear hammer pants. I don't know if any men wear hammer pants anymore. but yeah, try it and see. How about straight love wins? I think that's a pretty dope, because there's like a we're gonna beat you down with our love.
Yeah, I like that.
Straight love.
What
wins.
About straight love wins? The genetic demographic outcomes.
Not as punchy, but
no.
But yes, I agree with the the sloganeering
right.
standpoint. Always
because I just don't want to be mistaken. You know, I don't want, and I also don't want friendly fire. But
right.
I mean, how sweet would it be if we were both wearing like just basically rainbow clown suits right now? I remember being a kid going to parties. This was before clowns were really that scary. They were still kind of cool. So that shows how old I am. This is like pre-It, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, oh, wow, clowns. He's like making balloon animal. And they always were wearing rainbow everything. They had rainbow hair, rainbow clothes. And it was just sort of a super happy, fun situation. No one was like, this has to do with the sins of sodomy or anything like that. Or like changing your body with a surgery, you know, those things.
Just some solid
fun
flora and fauna by balloon. Well, I guess they don't do flora, but just some balloon fauna.
They have the flowers that squirt water.
Oh yeah, balloon trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean just solid fun and clowns in a non murderous way and rainbow in a non homo way and. Yeah. Yeah, that's
what if we did this?
The good old days.
What if our rainbow was actually the rainbow? Like we didn't have like just the solid flag, but we had a flag and it has the arced rainbow on it.
Yeah.
And that could be our thing.
I like that. Yeah.
That could be our thing. Maybe we should mock that up and have some people make it. And that's the straight I love Noah rainbow. That'd be kind of cool, actually.
Noah. As a straight man to straight man.
Because then people will be like, wait, I mean, I don't know. I kind of want to recapture all rainbow, not just the arc. But
that makes
be a
it
good,
clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could be like,
that's your point.
Yeah. Which is kind of funny because that means they would have the straight rainbow and we would have the bent rainbow.
Ironic.
Oh, my how the turntables have.
Oh my, how the turntables have. David Wallace just looking at him.
Right.
We should have the straight one. But ironically, the bent rainbow, as you point out, is the straight rainbow because of
that'd be cool.
Noah and whatnot.
Now, the other thing I've noticed is all these. So Budweiser has like, you can't even drink a Budweiser in June now without having pride rainbows on it. Budweiser came out, it was on Twitter with the asexual flag marketed merchandise. Have you seen this?
What the hell is the asexual
flag? So asexual is a new part of the LGBT alliance. It's people who have no sexual attraction for anyone. Not people who have no sexual attraction to you. It goes the other way. You have no sexual attraction for anyone on earth. And it looks like it's a black, purple, and white flag. I didn't spend too much time studying. I just rolled my eyes like, oh, man. But I don't understand why Budweiser's doing this. Is that their demographic?
I don't think it is. I think their demographic is very, very, very ridiculous heterosexual men. That's their prime target. You know my theory on all this? Now that I think about it, I think LGBTQ whatever is probably just trying to get some vowels in there. So asexual. So now they can make it like legat, leg bat.
Yeah.
That's my theory. But but like you say, no one would ever, even jokingly with their wife and father, say let's have a bunch of priests drinking a whatever, a purple and black beer with
Budweiser. Yeah,
and this would represent asexual. People all know that the men are either buttoning it up heterosexually in those all too rare instances, or homosexually. You know, there's too many priests are drinking Schmitzgay SNL.
Schmitz. Back when that was funny. Can you imagine if SNL did the Schmitzgay today? Oh my goodness! No, look out!
Skewered.
Was it Chris Farley? Was that Chris Farley on that?
It was Chris Farley and Adam Sandler doing the glass and the sunglasses repeat take. It's an amazing skit. But yeah, they keep that even out of SNL like mixtapes now. It's hard to find that one because they've struck it from everything. I mean,
I bet we can find a screenshot. We'll find a screenshot. Maybe we don't want to put it on though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is Gay Pride Month.
True.
You know, the thing about nominalism, which is at the center of feminism, so-called genderism, all this stuff, that's funny is first off, nominalism is the idea that there are no essences, you know, that anything is fungible.
There's no forms.
No forms. Sorry.
Hi, welcome to TNT.
Happy Gay Pride Month. Just in case. What was I saying about nominalism? Yeah.
Well, nominalism means there's just names. There's no ontological, metaphysical forms, essences, natures.
Right. What was I going to say that was really funny about the man, that guy coming out? He should have known better than to use a door for exiting.
He got out the window. Well, here, I'll riff on it, and then you'll get it, and then you jump in.
It was some funny thing.
Yeah, so nominalism is just, hey, there's no such thing as like a dog or a female or angel essence. There's just these things out there, and we humans are like, those things all look kind of the same. Let's call them dog. And all those things look kind of the same. Let's call that a fish, you know, or these things look kind of similar. Those are all called roses. And so we just sort of name everything, but there's nothing real about their essence or forms that makes them really distinguishable. So, you know, if that's your philosophy, which it is for every single liberal, if there is no God, there is no real metaphysical distinction in the world. So they would say a baby turtle is equal or better than a baby human because we say it is.
Right. And the end members, the maybe weird looking or the sort of outlier instances of those things. This is not a real type of, it's not a real species of a real genus. The ones that don't look mostly like the normal ones or act mostly like the normal ones, they don't necessarily have to be in the genus. Yeah.
That's right. So we can have different kinds of humanity. We can have maleness and femaleness, and then we can have male to femaleness and female to maleness, and we can have gay and we can have asexual. And you're like, well, I don't really think that's like in reality. Like that's not realism. See, we Catholics believe in realism. And they're like, well, there is no such thing as realism. It's just what we want to call it.
Right.
And we like it that way. So that's how, and they're like, no, we think there's a real nature behind humanity and it comes in male and female. And they're like, you're hateful.
Right. Right. This is why. But the reverse side of the coin is, what do you say to, I mean, the church doesn't weigh in on attraction, whether or not the source or the basis of someone's outlier attraction, like a man that's legitimately attracted to other men. He's not lying about this. Well, yeah, the church says
it's intrinsically disordered.
But it doesn't say where it comes from. It's intrinsically disordered no matter what. And so this, no matter what, whether or not it's nature or nurture that caused it, doesn't matter.
Right.
It's intrinsically disordered. Therefore, people looking at this from the outside think, oh, well, it tempts the nominalism, right? Because they're like, well, then you're just saying absolutely no matter what, you know, you can't act on this. Nominalists always get tempted to wage cultural revolutions based on, this wasn't my original point because I was going to make a joke, but I forget, it's long gone.
It's okay, we can
that
get deep.
That guy had to get some morning air.
He had to get that Danish.
He had to get that Danish in the morning air and say, yeah, I mean, but the point is cultural revolutions are always based on nominalism because people look at that, bleeding hearts, radicals, and they say, well, this suffers no exceptions. Your essence is the essence of heteronormativity,
right?
To use another one of their gay terms, and therefore you know other people are just left out in the cold.
Yeah,
that's and they can't deal with it. They just can't deal. They can't deal with nature as such. That's the thing about all these nominalists and these radical left groups. They just can't deal with nature. They always say to like creationist Protestants, you can't deal with reality. You can't deal with nature.
Yeah.
You kind of see where they. Protestants get a bad look by running from science. You get where they're saying it, but it's like, look, we're Catholic. You guys are running from nature as much or more than our Protestant brothers. Yeah. 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 More, clearly more, but they mean a certain set of qualifiers when they say, oh, you're afraid of science. It's like, well, you're just afraid of the science of everyday.
Well, they're
afraid. Realism.
They're afraid of nature because they're afraid of the God of nature. It's really a theistic situation. Everyone right now, or as soon as this video is over, or maybe just pause it, go read Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, Paul explains the origins of homosexuality. True. It's in both male and female lesbianism. Paul addresses both of them in Romans chapter 1 when he talks about sin and original sin. And he says, when people reject nature, the natural order, and they begin to worship creation, God hands them over to confusion and impurity. And he states explicitly, males with males, females with females. So it's in the human soul, an inversion of nature, where they don't worship God, they worship creation. And when you worship creation, that inversion becomes a perversion. That's the theology of St. Paul. Taylor Marshall didn't make it up. Go read Romans 1 and memorize in your mind. Anytime a debate comes up about homosexuality, always talk about Romans chapter 1, because that right there is the locus classicus for Catholic Christians talking about same sex attraction. Romans chapter 1.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good point. The locus in quo for. Yeah, that's good. But so nevertheless, when we deal with people that want to, the funny thing is this is irony of ironies. The nominalists are always rejecting real categories, right? Real ones that exist in nature. And they're I guess, relativizing absolute categories. And conversely, they absolutize relative categories. Like, because what would they say if we tried to take the rainbow back? Anyone can really use any symbol in their sloganeering for their group. They can say, no, you know, the rainbows, that's ours. You know, that's a non-nominalistic distinction. That goes with gay. And it's like, for one thing, not at all. But for the reasons you point out, ontologically, scripturally, it appears to be theistically, it appears to be a God thing. But technically, any group can try to use it. But this is the thing. Nominalists, like the gender movement, like the feminists, they're always absolutizing the relative and vice versa. And, you know, the funny thing going through this encyclopedia of feminism was written in the middle 80s, and it talks about how much disdain second and even presumably third wave feminists have for the transgenders. They weren't called transgenders back then. They're called transvestites and transsexuals. They changed all the terms, but it's same deal. Now that latter term covers all of the previous two, but they say like, they don't like this. Why? Because this is a disagreement between two types of nominalism. Because the whole idea behind even first wave feminism, our book that's coming out is going to be a red pill. People, even conservatives, Even conservatives that write anti-radical feminist books love to say first wave feminism was innocuous and good. This is just flat out wrong. It shared all the goals of second and third. They're not even that inchoately developed. They're relatively robust. But you'll see, you know, I can evidence that strongly and do. But the funny thing is, they say the basis of all feminism is fungibility, just like you thought. We don't want to be hamstrung by the idea of women as, you know, gatherers and mothers and nurturers.
Domestic.
You know? Yeah, so they take that, and genderism is just a little further out on the tree. Instead of saying there's no such thing as feminine, they say, well, really, there's no such thing as females. Ironically, the ones further out on the limb, the genderists, are adverting to a more classical concept of what male and female is when they, you have to wait for it, when they do the sex change. They're always trying to exaggerate some, what the feminists would say is some mythic form of that, you know, male or female when they switch sex. So the hardline essence of masculinity, femininity, the way the feminists do, you don't even like, think about this, in a gay relationship, my wife's always pointing this out, there's always a bull, you know, homosexual and a femme homosexual.
Not they're always. Even I think it's probably 90% of the time, but I live in Texas, so our data pool is smaller here, I think, but there's also the twins. Have you seen that? There's the bull. They're like the male and the female version. And then there's like the twins where they look like the same. Very rare.
It sounds even creepier. But
yeah, it's very creepy. But yeah, no, I think most of the time there's the guy one and then there's the girl one.
Yeah. And they're adverting to the entire patriarchal, hierarchical, crystallized system that they supposedly hate. And it's just, it's more of the same nominalists. I mean, and there's more nominalism that goes on if you're an anti-Western nominalist, right? Mm-hmm. Like a feminist, they get into, that's why there are all these weird bedfellows like feminists with Islamists. It's like, shouldn't you be the, you know? So what you end up seeing is that all nominalists end up having to pick all the various kinds of revolution and radical in world history are always nominalistic. They're rejecting Western essences, which are based on reality. They're not based just on decent Western culture. Western culture is decent because it's based on the real essences, the forms. Yeah. And it's funny that they all are usually just picking one slightly new form or essence to, you know, bend the knee to.
Yeah, it's all a mockery, just like taking the rainbow. It's all a mockery and perversion of what is in nature. Like, I've always wondered, you know, you see a gay guy at one of these parades, whatever, and he's wearing a dress and a wig or something, and you're like, in your community, aren't dudes attracted to dudes? Like, wouldn't wearing a dress kill your chances?
That's a funny way of putting it.
You know what I mean? Like, you're dressed like a female.
Right.
But you're same-sex attracted. You kind of like, in a gene pool, you would have effectively removed yourself. It's like if you are a male peacock and you, like, shaved all your feathers off.
Right.
You're screwed at that point.
It's a horrifying image.
Given you're in a bad situation. Yeah.
Don't shave your feathers off. I mean, so like that's a good point, though. It's like, doesn't this kill your chances shouldn't you look like the most masculine? And some of them like that. You know, some, you see good dudes in the gym, like super buff dudes that you're like, that dude's not buff in a straight way. I mean, a lot of the super strong guy, I mean, there's only so much. It's only so strong a straight guy wants to get.
I think if you're gonna go like that area of like male modelness, it takes a certain amount of narcissism to keep up with that. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
narcissism is key to.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, narcissism it's sort of this self love. It's also an inversion and a perversion. So you can see where that goes. As well, because most guys, I mean, I'll cut 5 or 10 pounds for a jiu-jitsu tournament to make weight in a certain weight class, but I'm not going to sustain that year round. I want to have a drink and, you know, eat some good food. I can't, I can't sustain it. I don't want to sustain it.
No.
I got my life, you know?
A straight married dude is like, yeah, I want to be strong.
I want to be strong.
I want to be strong, but I don't need to have like 4% body fat.
Yeah, or chiseled abs. I mean, there was a great commercial of, what's his name? Was it Peyton Manning? Yeah, it was Peyton Manning, and it's like a jeans commercial, and he's like, guys, if you're over 35, chances are you're never going to have a six-pack ever again. So buy these jeans. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
They like kept stretching them or something around the waistband. I can't remember what the product was, but it was just very frank and honest, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, why do you even care if you're – it's. I mean, like, you need to be strong. That's the thing. Well, I do see some straight – particularly in the cities, you see kind of metros, even straight metros, you know, walk in their – schnauzer around or whatever, you know, whenever I go to LA, San Diego, San Francisco, and it's just clearly a straight couple, but it's like, and the guy looks, it's kind of a Euro look, you know, like, yeah. I'll bet that guy has, not that I sit there and ruminate on it, I'll bet he has six packs abs, but I mean, maybe I do. It's a little for straight pride, gay pride month. No, yeah. I just mean, you can tell he'd be the kind of guy that's really cut. It's like, why not spend that time, that extra time of your day that it takes to getting your like abs just to 4% body fat? Why not spend that time like bench pressing, you doing squats? You know, that's, it's just much more functionally important for a man.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's just what goes through my head.
The inner in a dialogue.
Way. Well, in a straight, I mean, did you know that running, even this, running for more than 25 minutes? Yeah, I ran the marathon in Rome. I didn't know this. Like, just drops. It precipitously drops your testosterone.
Yeah, all like the endurance sports now, they've discovered that the Ironmans, the even the shorter triathlons, because I did one, was that a year ago? And my son was really into it as well. All those endurance sports seriously drop your testosterone count.
It's weird. It's kind of
counter. It's a stress on your body. It's the human body wasn't made to swim, bike, run for more than an hour. You know, you like chase the prey, or you run away from the leopard, but that doesn't happen for 3 hours. Yeah. Usually. I mean, it can every once in a while, but to train that and do it, it's really difficult. And
running from the leopard doesn't last more than 10 seconds and before the leopard gets you.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, they say that the best thing you can do if you're an older gentleman, and I'm thinking like 40 and up, is to load your skeleton with weight. They say that that's what helps build bone, keeps your testosterone levels up, builds muscle strength, keeps your back strong. Most people, you know, their back, either they have in their knees, they did something in sports as a young man, an injury, or it's you just become, you know, you sit at a desk in a cubicle and your muscles just atrophy. And then one day you do something strenuous and you hurt yourself. But if you can load your skeleton with weight through squats or deadlifts, bench press doesn't really load your skeleton that much, but it's okay. But I think the deads and the squats when you're older keeps everything working, man. Keeps your bones strong and your muscles strong and your testosterone up. And I just got the old man hex bar. You know what the hex bar is?
Mm-hmm. They're good. They feel much safer.
They do. It's basically doing deadlifts, but instead of having the bar straight, it goes around you. It's shaped like a hexagon. Yeah. And so you're standing in the middle, so all the weight's distributed evenly over the balls of your feet. Yeah. And they say as you move into your 50s and 60s and 70s, that's the better way to do it. So I got one. I use it.
That's
good.
Yeah, I'm tempted to actually start doing deadlifts because we just got the hex bars where I work out. So
I just put a little bit of weight on there. Yeah.
So we're talking this stuff in celebration of, in anticipation of Straight Pride Month.
Straight Pride Month.
We probably need to break down.
We didn't plan this, but we need to break down how we and people who watch this show are going to celebrate Straight Pride. So I would recommend that if you are a non-married straight man, that you would eliminate from your life all pornography and all masturbation, and that you would focus your attention on becoming the greatest virtuous Catholic man you can and find an amazing spouse, a woman. And that means that you have to have courage and fortitude to walk up to one and to talk with one with confidence. Women can smell like a guy without confidence. They have.
For sure.
I mean, look, women, I've been married to one for almost 18 years. Coming up this week, 18 years. And
oh, nice.
I am convinced that women can straight communicate pride. Better than me and can understand and argue, and maybe not argue like in a Thomistic, right,
mind out way,
yeah. But like in a spaghetti on a plate way, like going all over the place where I can't keep up and understand what's going on. I'm convinced with my sisters and my wife and all that they have these really great skills, right? And they can pick up on all kinds of like face cues and verbal cues and tones of voice. So you can't fake it with women. That's good. That way women don't ever marry and breed with losers. They don't get tricked, hopefully, though it does happen. So you got to be confident. And you can't be demented sexually and into porn and all that.
Without a doubt. Yeah, the only way, I mean, the thing, the great mystery of women, confidence is like the prime desideratum. Or it's a little more spatio, visual, and slash anatomical. Well, man, when you talk about initial attraction, it's a little more like an enigma wrapped in a riddle with women. But yeah, of course it's visual too, but except the attraction's basis is in confidence. Okay, so you tell young men this, young men that are riddled with, in the book, I talk about how the virtues that men ought to be trying to acquire in attracting a mate are, it begins with chastity, right? And you have to get, there is no platonic unity of the virtues. You got to get them all one by one. But in order to gain the what's the prime sexual desideratum or virtue for men is leadership. And yeah. The way you get that, there's always this bridge between chastity and leadership. You have to be non-independent. When men in our culture, see, the reason all these men are walking around half a man, it's a little counterintuitive, is because of the great amount of promiscuity. What a man is supposed to be the moral and the de facto leader, guarantor. And when a man just dates a woman, courts a woman to deflower her sexually, right? Think about it this way. It turns him into the supplicant and the woman into the goalie. And that's a position of authority. And it ends up reversing the roles in both a moral way and a practical way. And cuckolds the man. Mm-hmm. And men think, oh, what are you talking about? I'm macho. I'm a macho straight man. No, the way you're a macho straight man is by not attempting this. You keep your natural God-gifted role of leader through chastity. And then after that, you do have to get the other virtues. You need to be strong. You need to be smart. You need to be morally temperate. And you get these one at a time. But it's not enough. What men need to hear is it's not enough to have just one. You know, men that tend to be intellectual are like, well, this is my selling point. It's like, no, you got to be able to defend your ideas, because look at it out there, not in Solvang, California so much, just a town of Danishers, but out there in the wide world, the people don't want to hear, the radical left doesn't, the nominalists, they don't want to hear our ideas. So you have to be able to defend them when things go south, right? And then you have to be temperate in the, you know, in the execution of all this. You have to be prudent in the execution of all, not going too far. But this is why you really do, even though you don't get a platonic unity of the virtues at once, this is why a man needs all of these virtues, is because they're all necessary for the disposition of his leadership. Yeah. And porn and masturbation are just, they're out. They make a cuck of all men.
Yeah,
they do. Just make you a pathetic little needy grovelly. Self-possession. Self-possession is the other term for leadership. You are not self-possessed if you're into that
stuff. If you're self-abusing.
Right.
Self-abusing is not self-possessed. Because if you think about it, like from Plato, you know, we are a hierarchy, the intellect, the will, and then the appetites, the passions. And if you can't rule your own passions, you can't rule your own home, you can't rule your job. You can't rule the people who work under you, your society, anything. I mean, Plato's Republic, some people say, well, is it about politics of a city or is it about the internal politics of the person, where your intellect is the philosopher king, right? And your will is the military class. My answer is it's both.
It is both.
The human soul is a microcosm, though it's not either or. So if you're a young man or even an older man and you want to be married and you can't possess your passions through the grace of baptism and the sacraments, you're not going to be able to be fulfilled and lead a wife and run a home, which is a mini city, a mini polity. So that has to happen. Now, females, I'd be interested to hear what you say about this, Tim. If you're a young female, first we just did males. Now we're going to do single females who want to be married, and then we'll talk about married people for Straight Pride Month. Females, you got to give up feminism. That's your Eve in the garden grasping for fruit. And to men, it's really ugly and disgusting.
Absolutely. Well, and as all of the first feminists always pointed out, Phyllis Trible, and not that she was the first feminist, she was among the first wave of feminist intellectuals. They all were very honest about this. Like, yes, this is part of, they very much admire Eve and Lilith, as we talked about in one other show, because they understood that the abnegation of Adam was merely symbolic and partial in the abnegation of God, right? God's order. And this is why feminists always ask one if you don't believe me. All feminists admire Lilith much more than Eve, because they all say Lilith accomplished what Eve sort of failed at, which is avoiding punishment, right? Lilith was Adam's partly apocryphal first wife.
Allegedly, not true.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
First wife, who avoided punishment for disobeying Adam, disobeying God. She went outside the garden into the wilderness, representative of the serpent, and had sexual relations with demons and was able to basically create her own kingdom. She's basically a Luciferian female feminist. Yeah. So the point is, it's not only just unattractive. The reason that feminism, and what I mean by feminism, since people trip on this pebble, is the idea of, you know, female leadership, right? This isn't necessarily the order of the classical virtues or the cardinal virtues, but the first sex specific virtue for women, which corresponds, is what complementarity is. The way for men it is self-possession, leadership through chastity, is female fealty or docility, right? Mm-hmm. And again, this is
we can use the word of St. Paul, submission.
Submission. Yeah. But it's the right kind of submission, and it's not this mutual submission business. People are going to be like, "Oh, he means that." No, we don't mean that. It's unilateral submission. Only mutual submission in a symbolic sense. In a real sense, it's unilateral, monolithic, to a husband. But if you're submitting, females are already basically sexually more prone to virtue than men. But therefore, if they find a good mate, if they pick a good mate, with Christianity always, on behalf of the dignity of women, was the first. It didn't take any development of this doctrine over time. Always said a woman has to pick her own mate. It's not feminist. It's just female dignity, female intellect. Pick the right man and, could help him continue on the path of chastity. And that first virtue in a man, obedience, dovetails with the complementary docility, submission, whatever you want to call it, fealty.
Yep.
Yeah. And then lots of the virtues, the main cardinal ones, are non-sex specific, but they conduce in a sexual way in the relationship of complementarity in different ways. You know, your PB&J and French toast, to use your thing,
prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance.
People like that. People like that a lot.
They like it.
That's good. That goes in different directions in the sexual sphere for men when they know they have to be leaders, strong, prudent, just, temperate leaders. Women know they have to be prudent, just, temperate, whichever one I'm missing, brave followers in the sense.
Yeah.
And it just works. It just works perfectly and beautifully. All this stuff we're talking about, nominalism, always centers around a rejection of that. And that's. Yeah.
The other thing that's cool is, you know, the four virtues, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance. They're not like females have more, should have more of this and males. It's not distributed like that. Right. We are called, right, all of us to max out on peanut butter, jelly, French toast. Right. Prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance. And I think that shows that there's a unity to human nature. Right. Sure. There's a different vocation. Right. And a different placement within nature for the male and the female. But when it comes to the life of virtue, and they're expressed differently, we're called to fulfill and max out as best we can in each one of those, and with faith, hope, and charity too. So,
right. Like that's exactly right. Think about like non-sexual situations. Think of a situation where, I mean, by non-sexual, I don't just mean the act of coitus. I mean, where the two sexes aren't acting in predisposed ways with regard to one another. I mean, car accident, right? Sometimes after you get in a little fender bender, you get out and the person that you're in the fender bender with might be hot-headed. Mm. That's just what do you need right now? Prudence. And yeah, prudence tells you what to do. And that's not sex specific.
Right.
What do you need if you get, you know, your doctor says you're going to have to go to see the cardiologist. It sounds like you have a weird heart murmur, you know, on your yearly checkup. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, that requires fortitude, mm-hmm, right? But it's when you throw the two sexes in the same mix with one another, then all of a sudden the prudence, the fortitude, the temperance will call men and women toward different behaviors.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And it could be that in a certain situation where there's a disagreement over maybe a schooling situation for the children or a financial, the man who is the leader has to have prudence to make the right decision and the fortitude to stand up with his wife and say, this is what we're going to do. I've researched it. And then the wife also needs to have the prudence to understand that. And then also the fortitude to trust it.
That's right. That's exactly what I was talking about.
Both are excelling in the virtues here, but they're manifested in the situation, which is exactly what you just said. Yeah, so women, and the other thing I would say to women is, and this is politically incorrect, I can hear the screeches of the feminists coming from Lilith's throat, and yeah, that is, it is good to cultivate feminine things. You've been told, if you've grown up in the last 20 years, you've been told that, you know, wearing feminine clothing and cooking and those kind of things are bad. Don't do that. It's not true. It's actually wonderful. And if you're going to attract a traditional, God-fearing, virtuous Catholic husband, he finds that cool. He likes that. He yeah, thinks it's going to be really cool when he comes home and you have a pretty smile on your face and there's a wonderful smell in the air of food and he's hungry. He's like, man, I married the right woman. This is awesome. I love this woman. And he's going to give you a big kiss and you're going to feel awesome and life is going to be good.
Yeah.
Right.
Without a doubt.
This is common sense. Your grandma told you this, but everybody said, oh, don't listen to grandma. Well, actually, it'd probably right, be great grandma at this point.
Right. That's true. Yeah. And it's also fun. I mean, not just to say that we live in super happy, fun America, which we do, but it's also fun. One of my best friends turned me on to the idea of St. Teresa Lisieux's parents as doing such a good job. I think we've mentioned this before. Mm-hmm. Just they were like holiness first. Yep. But you know, you gotta do what you gotta do, holiness and obviously daily obligations. But after you tend to the exigencies of holiness and daily boring chores that everyone has some to do each day, even in summertime, I'm a teacher, still gotta do some stuff, still gotta get up and shave your face. And if you're, you know, even Hillary Clinton puts her pantsuit on one leg at a time, right? So, as they say. But you do that, and then you can tend to fun. I really like St. Teresa Lisieux's parents' model. It's just heterosexual, heteronormativity when things function, they function beautifully and naturally, and there are none of these. I forget what the Matrix movie called it. Paradoxes in the system where it's like, this doesn't work because we're trying to make a perverted view of nature work, like a couple of dudes being romantic, quote, with one another. It's like, it doesn't matter. Even if the system, you keep it airtight, you're going to be the girl, I'll be the guy, blah, blah. Right. It's going to come out in these paradoxes.
Yeah.
So that doesn't happen to straight couples that are playing by the rules.
Right. By the rules. Yeah.
No one's perfect, but you don't get those paradoxes where it's a major smell test. You're like, this is a moment that this doesn't work. You said, you get home from work. It doesn't mean you haven't been in an argument in the last month. You probably have if you're flesh and blood, a human being. But you get home from work, you walk in, things are ordered nicely around the home.
You gotta
might
get
not
home.
Be a mansion.
Okay, now we're moving from women to married couples. You got to get home, you walk up to your wife, and you just give her a big smooch. 10 seconds. Hang it in there. I think that's a great power. I mean, not a power move like you're being powerful over, but it's just like pro tip. Like it kind of just like resets the day, especially for her. She's been around kids, you know, maybe she doesn't feel pretty. Just kind of come in or dance, put on some music and dance with her. Our kids love that. Talk about straight pride. Put on some music and dance with your wife in the house. My wife loves it. The kids love it. They just, it's like they're just in awe. Like, our parents are dancing. It's so cool. You ever do that? You and Steph ever get
sometimes
the dance?
We put the music on and it becomes more dance fest for the kids.
Well, we do that too. We dance with dance party. Yeah. We call it dance party and we all just blare some music and everybody's dancing and dancing with the little girls and all that. But I think dancing with your wife is good for both of you and it's good for the kids. It shows leadership, submission, carefulness, tenderness, love. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's good for both of you to feel that, and it's good for the kids to see it. So I think part of Straight Pride Month is have fun, work hard, play hard, dance, kiss each other, hold hands when you walk down the street or at the park.
Yeah.
Let your kids see it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, a lot of messed up marriages out there. You see probably a lot of kids are not as a common witnesses to handholding or any even minor PDAs. They're good things between married couples. We live in a society where everyone says, you know, all people aside from married people ought to be doing PDAs, you know, in the park and gay, straight, bisexual.
Well, even James Martin says they should be doing it at church.
At church,
same sex couples.
According to Slim Jim Martin, but except not married couples, and it is a healthy thing for people to see.
Men need to know. I think most men know this, but there's PDA, like holding hands, and then there is like it's a really creepy thing that you see some guys do. It's like, I think they call it mate guarding. So this is where you see you'll see like a guy and he's like, there'll be like other men around and he's like all like covering her like, this is my woman. It looks really creepy, you know? It's like, it's not confident.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
You see that kind of thing at the mall a lot.
Yeah.
You know, walking, you mean that? Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost like they're trying to protect the girl from other guys or something. You see it sometimes and it's pretty obvious. That's not good. It's not a public display of affection. It's more of a guarding. It shows an insecurity, a lack of confidence. Yeah. I'm just talking about you're walking the kids to the park and you and your wife are holding hands and talking.
Yeah.
You know?
Dig.
Yeah. So there it is. Pride Month. Be into it. The heterosexual way. Right?
Yeah. Which is not June, I guess. But we said all 12 are hetero pride month. So I guess it is. Yeah.
Another great thing to do to show hetero pride, people, is have babies. Having babies is the ultimate way to show your heteronormative pride. Because we can do that, and it's a beautiful, wonderful, miraculous, well, it's not miraculous, but a amazing gift that God's given us. And so to be able to be in sacramental marriage, which is a sacrament, and then to bring about these little human persons, it's awesome. So, I mean, and also when we say pride, we got to say we don't mean the capital sin of pride. We mean having a humble respect and gratitude for what God's given us and what we're made of. So there it is. Pray the rosary. If you're not praying the rosary every day, like Our Lady of Fatima said, you're not in the game. You're not in it to win it. Yes, we all make mistakes and, or, you know, things happen, sickness, stress, travel. So we don't always get it in, but pray that rosary every day. Make it a commitment 365 days a year. You can't watch these shows and not be practicing your faith. You can't be in this. You can't be like, I'm all about Our Lady of Fatima, Third Secret, all that, but I don't pray the rosary every day. Got to be in the game. Got to be in the game. Right. So pray that rosary every day. Love your spouses. Oh, how far along is Steph with baby Miriam?
Almost coming up to like in the fifth, sixth month.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
She feeling good.
Yeah. She's feeling good. Second trimester is winding to a close here, but, it's usually her smoothest one. So
that's joy is always the second trimester was doing good. And then she's pregnant in the summer and it was third trimester. It gets real hot and uncomfortable.
I know. And we're going to Florida too. Well, so are you. Yeah. We're going to Florida.
Yeah.
2 years ago, we were in Florida and she was pregnant with little Gaby. And Florida is a new level of humid in the summer. So
Swamp.
It's swampy. Human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well,
straight pride.
Yes. We're in it. So, love your spouses, find a spouse, have children if that's your vocation. And until next time, peace.